Hello again, everyone. It's me, your host, Dry Toast, the host with the most. And how y'all do today? Today's going to be an interesting little episode, a little side turn. I was recently interviewed by a young gentleman with a really great podcast, Jeremy Borman, with the Bizion podcast. And Bizion is a melding of the two words, business and vision. And basically, the way he describes his podcast is a new way of tackling problems in business, law, and life together. So really great idea, and he's got some really great guests and really intriguing, deep discussions. Well, until he interviewed me. So Jeremy interviewed me on China versus USA. So that's an interesting one. It's we're going to get into some prognosticating and crystal ball gazing. And you know, I have to say, Jeremy asked such deep and well-thought-out questions that I really enjoyed the podcast. And so I had him on my show, and I interviewed him, and we started out talking about, is the USA moving away from the rule of law? And that was to be our discussion, but you know, we ended up going into some interesting directions. And so I won't tell you those directions. I'll leave you hanging. But we really had a great discussion on some really deep topics that day. So that'll be coming up in a week or so. All right. And so without further ado, let's get you into the podcast. Remember, folks, if you like the podcast, remember to share, to like, follow the podcast, subscribe, give us some great reviews, support us. Okay. So without further ado, let's get into the interview here with Jeremy Borman of Bizion Podcast. And again, this is just a re-release of his episode that he's already released on his Bizion Podcast. So here we go.
Welcome to another episode of the Bizion Podcast. Today, we're just going to discuss USA versus China. For this purpose, we have a really, really special guest. His name is Jerry. And Jerry, it's really an honor to have you here today.
Oh, thank you, Jeremy. I really appreciate your having me on the show, and I'm looking forward to a great discussion today. You know, I'll try and give you a Reader's Digest version, although I'm not very good at Reader's Digest versions. But, you know, even from a young age, I was always very interested in reading and learning. And, you know, I was reading stuff far more ahead of than what I should have. I just had a curiosity and always been interested in history, politics, religion, science, just always wanted to know. You know, whenever I have a discussion with somebody, I'm the guy who always say, well, why? Why this? Why that? Or, you know, and so I was working out of town, so I had extra time. I went to the library and I wanted to get a book on the life and times of Jesus. Not a religious book. I just wanted a book on what it was like. What was his daily life like? And I ended up taking out this kind of really crazy revisionist book. And it got me thinking how anybody can write books on anything. And so I just started researching. I decided that day to research religion, science, history, politics, and read as much as I could, learn as much as I could. And then one day I decided I'm going to put this into a podcast. I'm always looking for the fact, which is why I called it the fact of the matter. I'm always looking for the facts.
There was one U.S. general that stated by the year of 2025, there will be a war between the United States and China. What do you think about this?
Boy, that's a bold statement. There are numerous both military, political analysts, economists. There's several people saying that, you know, and they know a lot more than I do. So I can only speculate based on the knowledge I have. But I can't see it. I just don't see it. The United States being a democratic country. What's called a classic liberal democracy based on natural rights, and where we as human beings have these certain natural rights. There's a great professor, I think he's passed on now, I think it's Robert Dahl from Stanford University, and he was very big, very well-recognized professor in political studies on democracy was his main area of study. And one of the things he said was that classical liberal democracies, countries, generally don't fight wars with each other. Now, China's not a democracy, although they say they are. They're not. But the U.S. is, and so democracies in general don't fight big wars. There are certainly battles and small wars. I mean, we've seen that, right? They don't tend to fight those kind of wars because there's a war on that scale. There's nothing in it for anybody. Everybody's going to lose. We're all going to lose. And so China as well on the other side, China knows that. The Chinese people know that. And in these big, big countries like Russia, China, these big powers, Russia, China, the U.S., Great Britain, whenever two countries are at odds with each other, there's 100 people behind the scenes talking, you know, saying, we got to keep things calm, relax. We don't want to blow you up. We don't want to blow you up. There's always people talking behind the scenes. And I don't see it. I don't think so. Now, would I say 100% I'm sure of that? No, I'm not 100% sure of that. But I'm more than 50% sure.
Do you think one of the escalation points could be Taiwan?
Well, that's the way things are now. Obviously, Taiwan is the main tipping point that would cause a war like that. And because of the reasons you mentioned, they're a big semiconductor producer. And now the United States is trying to stop China from getting semiconductors and the newest, best semiconductors. So that's going to become even more important for China. Plus, it's very big for China to save face because Taiwan originally was part of China. And when the Communist Party took over, I think in 1948 or 49, I think, when they swept across the land, they've ever since then, they considered Taiwan as part of China and they want it back. That would be in my mind, that's the main thing that would cause it. Who knows, 5 years from now, who knows?
Do you think in that context, because a lot of, I think, like U.S. senators, like Nancy Pelosi, they took a trip to Taiwan on purpose. Do you think that's kind of a provocative action?
Well, that's a good question. Short answer, no. That's all posturing. Major powers posture all the time. They do all these things. And they know it. You look at a leadership race in politics, United States, Canada, Britain, anywhere, the people running for the leadership of a party, right? Well, they're at each other. Throughout the whole election, they're going after each other. Somebody wins, and then they're all friends again. So, you know, a lot of that stuff is posturing for political purpose, and both sides know that. I wouldn't say the U.S. is being the aggressor. I'd say they're both being kind of the aggressors. China is every day flying into the what Taiwan calls their defense zone airspace. And the one day they had something like 20-some incursions across the line. So they're being pretty, pretty assertive. Of course, the United States is, other countries are, even us, even little Canada, you know, are sailing ships through the Taiwan Strait. The United States had a battle group in the area recently. So I think they're both playing the game right now. They're both being pretty assertive.
Why does the West and like countries such as Canada don't just cooperate with China?
Yeah, boy, there's a short answer and a long answer to that. The short answer, and I guess when I give the short answer, it's going to require the longer answer. I can't just give you the short answer and leave it at that. It's just like leaving you hanging. But the short answer is classical liberal democracies, which most of the Western world is, are fundamentally at odds with a communist Marxist system like China like Russia was for the longest time. They're fundamentally incompatible systems. And when Mao Zedong passed away in the late 70s, and then Deng Xiaoping became the leader of China, I don't know how familiar they are, but Mao had his Cultural Revolution, which was an absolute disaster. 60 to 80 million Chinese killed their own citizens, many more in jail. Families are still hurting. In fact, Xi Jinping, the current leader, is having problems now because a lot of the surviving victims of Mao's Cultural Revolution are at the age now where they don't care anymore, and they're speaking out about all these things. So after the Cultural Revolution and Deng Xiaoping came in at power, he tried to modernize China, tried to bring it forward, tried to give people a better life, and tried to get along with the West. And so the West were happy to accommodate. China was doing it for their own reasons. We were doing it for our reasons. We were hoping that China would just get along with the program and get democratic. And China was also doing it. And now, even more so with leaders like Xi Jinping, they're cooperating with us for the wrong reasons, to get information on us. It's very big in Canada right now. There's huge, huge communist influence in Canada. We're fighting for our very democracy as we speak. So there, you know, cooperating isn't that simple, right? Both sides are trying to sneak their system in on the other side. You're having your challenges you're in Germany. United States is having their challenges with that as well. So I guess it's a very complicated answer why we don't just get along and cooperate with each other, right?
So they're not really better, but there is a global kind of competition between those two superpowers. Is there anything you think is like really crucial to that?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. So the initiative you're speaking of with China, I believe, is what they call the Belt and Road Initiative. And they're going out to all these countries that could use their help. And they're helping them, right? But of course, with help from China comes something else that you don't necessarily want, right? But they're doing it also because, coming back to your discussion, your comment on resources, China imports a lot of their energy. China imports a lot of their food. And China's got a big, big population to feed. And so they need a lot of these resources because they import them. So it's very, very critical for them. I think over the next 5 years, if they don't solidify their resources, I don't think they're as strong as they make out to be. I don't think China is as strong as everyone thinks. Communist countries, even Russia, you know, when they were the Soviet Union, they always put on a big show about how powerful they are. But when the Soviet Union fell, they fell hard and they fell fast. And so anytime a communist country puts on a show of where they're at, you know they're probably not there. They're probably worse off. China's had real estate meltdown recently. Xi Jinping, who is taking a lot of control to himself. So now you got one man controlling a country of a billion people. To bring this full circle and try and answer your question, I think it's more important for China than for the United States to build relationships and build resources, because with both of them, you're getting something you don't want. The United States doesn't just say, hey, here's all this help. We don't want nothing back from you. They're always going to want something back, but they're going to want trade deals. They're going to want contracts to want this. Here's what we need from you. We need this and this and this. What China needs from you is to eventually become a communist country. They need more favorable governments. They're not going to change their system except by power. So I think it's more critical for China to build those resource relationships than it is for the U.S. U.S. can always build trade relationships.
You mentioned trade relationships, and there is this thing called BRICS. It's not directly a trade relationship, as I understand it. But what do you think about it? Is there like a potential of that taking over the kind of alliance that the U.S. has with other countries?
Oh, good old BRIC. Yeah, they haven't been in the news much lately. So BRIC is Brazil, Russia, India, China, I think. And South Africa now? Okay.
All right. So, you know, they haven't been in the news much, and I haven't researched them much lately. So I don't know where BRIC is at, but I know it was a big initiative they were working on. I know India and China do have some relationships, but I haven't seen them in the news, and I haven't researched that BRIC much lately. So I don't know where that is at.
Where do you stand in this kind of global, I wouldn't even call it a conflict, but this kind of competition between countries?
Well, hands down, not because we're neighbors to the U.S. and we need them, or not because of what I get out of it or we get out of it. Simply, when I look at the world and I look at what's the best thing for everyone, hands down, I'm on the U.S.'s side. Is the U.S. perfect? No. Is anybody perfect? Nobody's perfect. You know, if Canada or Germany, if we became world powers, we'd act just like China, just like Russia, just like the U.S. You know, the bully of the bloc always behaves like the bully of the bloc, right? But when we take a step back, we look at the 30,000-foot view. We look at the United States as a big picture. We look at China as a big picture. The United States, again, as I mentioned, is a liberal democracy with and, you know, often the communist countries call us the capitalists, right? And I want to clarify one thing. We are not capitalists. There are probably no capitalist countries in the world. Whoa, what are you talking about there, Jerry? Well, our economic systems in the Western world are generally capitalist-based, free market economies. You know, we're free to trade, and we just bring our goods to the marketplace and we trade with each other. But we have heavy government influences, and, you know, we have social programs, welfare, different economic programs, trade restrictions, fiscal policies, monetary policies. We have what's called mixed economies. So I want to clarify that. Mixed economies that are generally capitalist but with some socialist influence to them. A lot of this is credit to economist John Maynard Keynes was one fellow who brought this into the picture. So I wanted to clarify that. So we are liberal democracy where basically the people are for the most part, free to do what they want to do. Now you go to a communist system and the people of China have no say in what happens. The government of China recently came out just the other day, I think it was, and what was it they said? That there are no such thing as human rights. Like, whoa. You know, like, okay, so boom, I'm instantly on the U.S.'s side of this thing. Now, do I want to see a nuclear war and get China obliterated? No, who wants? You know, they're human beings, and most Chinese are like you and I. They just want to live their lives. They don't want nothing to do with this politics. So I'm clearly on the side of the U.S., but my hope is that one day what happened to the Soviet Union happened to China and that the system just collapses, nobody gets hurt, and well, I was going to say freedom reigns, but Russia's kind of gone backwards on that one a bit. So I guess that's my take on it.
You made a great point. You said that the regulators kind of control capitalism. What would you say to, you know, people and even arguments from China that kind of the big companies control politics because there are lobbies, there are, you know, there's corruption in the West, in every country, of course, but especially also in the West. What would you say against these type of arguments?
I'd say that's the pot calling the kettle black. The Communist Party of China is one of the most corrupt governments in the world. They have all kinds of relationships with the different the triads and the gangs. And there's a great book out right now. The Canadian author, if his name comes to me, I'll mention his name. It's escaping me at the moment, but the book's called Willful Blindness, about how the government of China and the gangs have infiltrated Canada heavily with money laundering. And unfortunately, some of our government officials have been complicit in this. So the pot's calling the kettle black there. It's you can't pick one aspect of a government or system of living of economics. You can't pick one aspect of it and say, there you go, it's not perfect. You have big companies that influence the economy, therefore your whole system should come down. That's, you know, when we look at the Western economic systems, they've brought more people out of poverty in the last 100 years than socialism will ever do.
What do you think about the relationship between China and Russia at the moment? Is there something that should scare the U.S. or other nations that, you know, Russia is obviously in a war, and they are obviously, I wouldn't say they are supported, but they obviously are in connection with China. Where do you see that kind of relationship having an influence between also China and the U.S.?
Well, these are such great questions you're asking. I'm not too concerned about that relationship at the moment. If anything, all it will do is bleed China, because it's bled Russia. Everybody thought Ukraine was going to roll over in a couple of days. Well, surprise, surprise. And, the Ukrainians' resolve hasn't weakened any. So Russia has been really, that's really tapped a lot of their resources. And now China, if China's going to support them with weaponry and such, then it's going to deplete them even more as a country. So the two of them depleted. And it's one of those typical relationships of they're in a relationship not because, I guess, out of need, because they both need to be. China needs friends. Russia needs weapons. They're not saying, you know what, looking at each other's ways of doing things, we should be long-term friends. That's not what kind of relationship it is. It's a relationship of China needs friends real bad right now. Russia needs weaponry real bad right now. Food. China's exporting food to Russia. So it's more of a relationship of need than a long-term we should be friends forever kind of a thing. Let's get married and be friends forever, right? That's kind of like, let's live together for a while. So, I don't see, plus as well in the West, there's China's been very aggressive lately, and it's woken up Japan, it's woken up Australia. Many countries are starting to build up their military in response to what China's doing. So, no, the only thing that concerns me, the one that concerns everybody, we don't want some fool making a bad mistake and setting off a world war, because then all bets are off, and it's, stick your head between your legs, kiss your bum goodbye, right? So,
yeah, let's talk about it. How would a World War III look between China and the U.S.? So what can we expect? What is like the, I mean, obviously the worst case scenario, everybody gets nuked. What are the dynamics in your opinion?
Oh, boy. Boy. Well, let's look at it, first of all, from a conventional warfare standpoint. And, nobody really knows how China will fare, because they've never really been tested in a big war. They've never really had to fight any big wars. In fact, they've never fought much in the way of wars at all, like the United States has fought. So the United States is a lot more experienced in these things. United States being a quote-unquote capitalistic economy, right, with mixed economy. But being a democracy, capitalistic, our countries, when you get up in the morning and, like your podcast, if you do well with your podcast, you benefit. Whereas in China, if I do well making weapons for the government, I don't benefit. Why am I going to get up an hour earlier than everybody else and work an hour later and think a lot harder when there's no benefit for me? Whereas in our systems, there is benefit, and it shows throughout the last, the last 50 to 100 years, I guess, of weaponry. Western nations tend to have always been ahead in weaponry. So from a strictly conventional standpoint, I don't see it ending well for China. Although the United States will have supply issues, because they're going to be fighting halfway across the world. So as long as they got their supply issues in place, conventionally, I don't see it going well for China. Plus, with all the unrest of the Chinese citizens, if the nation's at war, that leaves them open to a revolt, from an internal revolt. And I know Xi is very worried about that. He's gotten rid of a lot of Communist Party leaders that aren't 100% loyal to him. So he's very concerned about that. So if it stays conventional, I'm thinking the West will come out on top, all the allies involved in it. If it goes nuclear, it's like anything. We're all dead. If it goes nuclear, who knows? We've never seen a nuclear war. Everyone has deterrent. You know, you have nuclear missiles. I have things to shoot them down. But it's never happened, so who knows? Who knows? But I can't see it being anything other than ugly, 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 right?
What is China doing to keep its dominance? And what is China doing better than the United States as a superpower?
Oh, good question. Where is China better now? Well, I know they've been working a lot on, and you talked about it earlier, well, the Belt and Road Initiative, where they're reaching out to African nations. They're reaching out to as many nations as they can, saying, hey, we'll help you develop. Let's be friends, right? And so, you know, they're definitely doing that well. United States, like Canada right now, we're fighting. And make no mistake, you can be sure that China is somewhere behind the scenes on some of this. But the United States is fighting politically right now, having heavy challenges from a hard left, what would you call it? A hard left initiative from the radical left. Canada, we're experiencing the same thing. So those are the challenges that we have to develop. Democracies are in a relatively weak position right now until we resolve those things. They're very divided, right?
Right, makes sense. What do you mean by this hard left challenge? Can you be a little bit more specific? Is there something, is it like more of an open movement, or how can I imagine this?
Yeah, I always hesitate to talk about left and right in politics, because then the fight's on and the argument's on, well, what do you mean? And, you know, well, you're ultra right, and the name calling starts, and I avoid that completely. But this is literally indisputable when I say the left, the far radical left, I'm talking socialist, communist, Marxist, have been influencing the West covertly for the last 60, 70 years. This is no secret. You can read their own literature that they publish. You can read published literature by Western authors. A great, great book on this. If you want a fantastic book on this, it's called, it's Dr. Stephen Hicks. It's, I forget the exact name. It's like about explaining postmodernism. Postmodernism is I don't know if you're familiar with the concept. It's kind of it originated from leftist thinking, socialist, that kind of thinking. Anyways, there are Marxist authors from the 20th century who very clearly said we need to infiltrate the universities, we need to infiltrate the media, the family. By golly, they've done that in the West. So those are the challenges. That's what I'm speaking of when I say this radical left that we're dealing with right now.
So more like traditional values like family, you know, working hard. You maybe think today it's more about ultra freedom, ultra like super work-life balance, or not even work. Is that the type of things that they've been trying to do?
Well, I wouldn't explain it in those terms. I guess the best way to explain it is if we take the extremes of capitalism, we take the extremes of socialism. The extremes of capitalism, I would never want to live in a completely capitalist system. Because then eventually the guys that get up the earliest and work the hardest and do what it takes to win, they're going to own all the candies eventually. And we're seeing some of that in the West. We're seeing a little bit of that, and it's going to come around back into balance. Whereas with the opposite side of coin, the left, the socialist, the Marxist, where nobody gets ahead, allegedly nobody gets behind either, everybody gets the same. But the problem with that that's clearly manifested itself in the last 50 years in any socialist country is that nobody works very hard. And the classic example was Russia. This is an actual true story where the Russian companies, the government would come to a company, shoe company, okay, your quota for the month is this many shoes. You have to make 100 shoes. And there was a shoe manager that needed to make, let's say it was 100 shoes. And he knew he couldn't do it because none of the people, some guys would come in late, some would leave early. Nobody worked very hard. They're not motivated. They were alcoholics. They had a lot of problems with alcohol in those days. Anyways, so he made 100 size 10 left shoes. But he got his 100 shoes up. But they're all size 10 and they're all left. There was no right shoes. He couldn't sell them because there are no pair of shoes. So their economics aren't as strong as ours. So that's what I'm kind of saying. I'm showing the extreme ends of things. I'm exaggerating to show what the ideological battle is right now in the West. Those are the. I don't know if that answered it for you. Because both capitalist and both socialist, everybody wants to have a work-life balance. So that's not really an accurate way to describe the difference between the two.
Where do you see the future of these two superpowers? Where do you see the future of the U.S., China, and their relationship to each other?
Both China and the United States, most countries in the world right now are facing the same problem in that birth rates are dropping. And the amount of people paying in, the amount of people working age, paying into the system to support the people past the working age, is the ratio is rapidly dropping. And so all these countries are facing economic crises, and we're living longer, right? So when I get past retirement age and I retire, I'll be living longer than my dad, my granddad, and there's less people your age working to support me, right? So that's a problem that all the countries are facing. And I believe China is facing it worse than everybody because they had under Mao Zedong, toward the end of Mao's reign, they had the one child policy.
I remember.
Yeah. And it was terrible. And I don't know the truth, but for most of the people I know, I have one fellow who's a Chinese fellow who's very into the Chinese politics. And he tells me that there was a lot of It's tragic where they killed the baby girls because they needed a baby son, both for cultural reasons, but also working on the farm and such. So such a tragedy that there's a whole generation of Chinese men. They're going to have a hard time with finding wives, finding families, reproducing. So I think China might be facing that crisis bigger than everybody else right now, although everybody's facing that. We are kind of heading, you mentioned Cold War, we're kind of heading in that direction at the moment, and I hope we don't get into another Cold War scenario, because all that leads to is trillions and trillions of dollars wasted on missiles. But that seems to be where we're heading at the moment. But, you know, everything is in flux right now. I've never seen a situation in my life where everything is in such dynamic flux that 5 years from now, we could have a situation completely different than what we have envisioned right now. If I had to guess, you put a gun to my head, I think at the end of the day, United States will get through its challenges. The United States, the people of the United States, of the Western world, are used to being free. We're used to freedom. And communist countries count on that, and they assume that us fat Westerners are never going to fight because we're too lazy and fat and we love our good lives. But what they fail to realize is sooner or later we will fight, and when we do fight, look out. And so I think Western nations will come out on top. We'll survive. We'll come through this, and things will be good. Where China ends up, I don't know. I really don't know. But I don't see them coming out on top. I just don't see any way they'd come out on top.
Jerry, it's really been an honor to have you at the show. Please come by again. And this has been the Bishop Podcast, your podcast for business, law, and daily activities. And see you soon.